Hello, welcome to North and South Podcasts. This is one of our well-being episodes. I'm going to be speaking to Dave. Also want to say that this is supported and produced in association with Hope Street, the fantastic charity based in Ormskirk in the northwest of England. Details of Hope Street in the podcast notes. Don't forget, you can support North and South Podcasts by going to ko-fi.com and putting in North and South Podcast. That's ko-fi. Every single piece of support financially, every share, every like, every rating, it really is appreciated. It makes a huge, huge difference to me. I would like to turn this into a long-term thing and make a difference in people's lives. So please do support in any way you can. The information about ko-fi.com is in the podcast notes too. Enjoy. Hi everyone, this is Tim at North and South Podcasts. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at North Podcasts to like and share. Today I'm speaking to Dave, and I don't really want to do an intro to this because you'll see it in the title of the podcast, because I want Dave to speak for himself. Dave and I are going to have a chat about effectively becoming a better person and dealing with aspects of addiction or semi-addiction or partial addiction or whatever people may wish to call it. So I'm going to let this conversation develop. But obviously my first question will be very indicative of what Dave and I are going to be talking about. And I'm going to allow him to define his response to that in any way he sees fit. So Dave, thanks for joining us. When did you last drink alcohol?
509 days ago. I've got an app on my phone that tells me this. So I gave up during the pandemic because I felt during the pandemic I was starting to drink a little bit more than I should have done. It's a lot more complicated, the story, but that's when I took my last drink anyway.
Interesting. I have spoken to some people who said that during lockdown, they drank more alcohol, or they drank alcohol when they hadn't been. And I think that lockdown did have a bit of an impact on people. Some of it negative, some of it positive. You know, obviously you've used things positively, but did you find that the start of lockdown led to you drinking more, which then prompted you to say, I need to move away from that?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Because I was starting to drink earlier and earlier in the day. So I used to crack open a few bottles of beer, usually for the government announcement, daily announcement. It was like an event to have a few beers of that, and just carried on throughout the evening. And as I say, I reached the point in the August of that year when I thought, right, well, it's no good, this. And I actually decided to moderate. So I spent a lot of time researching online, listening to podcasts about moderation, because I thought, well, really, I just want to be a normal drinker. I don't want to feel that alcohol's got any control over me. But once I started reading about it and listen to the podcasts, you realize there's so many stories about moderation, and it's not really an option for people who'd reached a point I'd reached. So it was at that point that I decided, well, maybe I'll just carry on not drinking and see how it went. So I kept going. And then the next obstacle that I found that most people found was they reach a point around about 6 or 7 weeks, and the brain tells them that you didn't really have a problem with drink, you've done 6 or 7 weeks, it's easy, this, you know, just go back to normal drinking, just drink a bit less, you'll be okay. Unfortunately, the podcasts and the stuff I was reading on the internet was telling me to ignore that voice, because that's a very common with your brain's talking to you and telling you, you know, you'll be all right, it's okay. So I powered through that, and it was very difficult those first few months, because I was constantly thinking about drink, and I knew how easy it would be just to go out and get some and get some relief of mind. But I carried on, and I got to about 3 months, and I've been listening to more podcasts, reading more stuff. And one thing that struck me was that you need to change a frame of mind to start to think, well, life is better without alcohol. And once I made that switch in my mind that I'm not missing out, because at the start, I felt that I was missing out on something. I was punishing myself by not drinking. I was scared that that my friends weren't going to like me anymore. I was scared I wouldn't like my friends anymore. All these sort of strange things going around your head. But once I came to the decision that life is so much better without alcohol, I don't need alcohol. And the past year or so has been a lot easier and a lot more fulfilling.
That's powerful stuff. I've heard a lot of people say, like someone like Tony Robbins, who's like a bit of a life coach, etc., say that one of the first things you need to do when you're trying to make a change is you need to say to yourself, right, I am not a drinker. I am not a smoker. No, I'm not a smoker. And in many ways, you don't want to say that word, because in many ways, if you say, I am not a smoker, you're acknowledging the smoking and you're acknowledging or whatever it might be. But did you find that change in your head when you said, I'm going to change my identity? Was that a powerful moment for you? And did you feel that you'd done all the work before then, that actually did become a change? Did you feel like you had to go through a big process before then to get to that? Or were there still battles after that point?
I think it didn't come to me in a flash. It just came in a sort of realization. So I first heard someone say, okay, you've got to, you know, a good way to frame it is to think, well, life is so much better without alcohol.
Yeah.
And at the start, I didn't really believe it. I thought, well, yeah, maybe, but I wasn't convinced. But the way I was feeling from not drinking, this sort of inner calmness, this increasing confidence, sort of made me think, well, maybe that could be right. I kept on not drinking.
Brilliant. And when lockdown started in March 2020 in England, I started doing meditation, and I've been doing it ever since. And it took a good month or two to kind of develop that as a normal part of my day. And I had this voice saying, oh, you know, this is crap, it's a waste of time, etc. And yet, although you might say, well, that's a positive that you're adding to it, whereas what you're trying to do is take away a negative. It depends how you kind of frame it. But I know a lot of people like James Clear in Atomic Habits, they say like it takes 30 to 60 days to change your mind, to develop new habits, etc. And that can be very, very challenging in that time. And one of the things he talks about in his book is like how you need to change your environment and your relationships. And you hinted there that, like, what are other people going to say? What, when you decided, right, that's it, did you change the availability of alcohol in your home? Did you say anything to other people to make it easier so that they knew to do certain things? So were there any kind of changes you made to your immediate environment or to your relationships to help you?
Well, I think the time I did it, I was quite lucky because at that stage, I managed almost to only drink when I went to watch the football.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of football on, so I had plenty of chances. And my whole mind was thinking all the time about getting out to watch the football in the pub. Yeah. Having a few drinks before, a few drinks afterwards, the whole thing. But the time I gave up was when there was no football on. So it gave me this sort of a month of not going out. The lockdown was on, so there's no social things going on. So I was quite lucky in that respect that I was able to put in the hard work when there's nothing going on.
No, that's good. And I think that lockdown gave me that opportunity with the meditation thing as well. With that kind of gradual thing, you know, the way you said that you were only doing it for the football at first. You know, they often say, like, people who smoke or drink, you shouldn't just go, like, cold turkey overnight because you're less likely to be successful. And I think what you did is you used that opportunity around you to say, right, I'm going to make this change. And I think it's important for people to realise that things don't happen straight up. You can make a decision. Anyone can make a decision, right, I'm not smoking from now. It's what happens in, like, 4 or 5 days when other people you're with start smoking, or in a week's time when your mates say, oh, we're going out for a drink, are you coming with us, kind of thing. And that's when the real test can begin. But I think lockdown, it kind of, I know a lot of people made a lot of changes in lockdown and said, right, I don't want to go back to what I had, and I'm better now, and that's made me see things. So I think that's been one of the benefits of lockdown. Do you have any alcohol in your home, or do you kind of...
No, I mean, obviously I live with my two young boys, so they're not going to be drinking, so there's no alcohol in the house, but it would be so easy to get some because there's so many supermarkets around here.
Yeah.
And basically get, but that wasn't real, it wasn't about access to it, it was me trying to be mentally strong enough to be happy not to have it.
Yeah.
And that's just the once I'd reached that point, I was then able to go out to the pub to watch football.
Yeah.
And drink alcohol-free beer.
Yeah.
And the same at home. I'd buy alcohol-free beer to sit and watch the football at home as well.
Yeah.
So it's just one of the things that I use to try and ease the transition.
Yeah.
Into not drinking.
Yeah, and again, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that's the route to take. I know that I heard a psychology course a few years ago where someone said, like, there's been loads of studies. Willpower only gets you so far. You need to change your environment, your relationships, and plan for all this. And I know when I went gluten-free earlier, last year, I did it in 3 or 4 stages because I know that that's going to be more realistic, etc. Now, I gave up alcohol in 2008, and it was a bit more complicated. I've got a genetic illness, and I had some quite severe complications, which some of the listeners will remember from previous podcasts. And I was very, very ill in 2007, and one of the specialist doctors put me on these new medications. I'm still on some of them. And he said to me, you shouldn't really drink with this. And I said, well, what will it do? And he said, oh, it'll increase the toxicity in your kidneys or your liver. And I thought, I was 27, 28 at the time. No, actually, I was 29 at the time. And I thought, do you know what? The hangovers were getting quite bad by the time I was 26, 27. And I was a binge drinker. I wasn't really someone who drank in the house. But I found the decision when he told me that, after what I'd been through, I found that decision very, very easy to make. Like, I'm no longer a drinker. And because I'd been so ill, I didn't leave the house I was in hospital or housebound for about 4 or 5 months. So it was kind of out the habit. But anyway, I said, oh yeah, I've made the decision. I'm not a habitual drinker. And then about 3 weeks after, there was a bottle of Coors in the fridge, and it started making itself known every time I opened the fridge door. And I thought, I don't even drink in the house. Like, why is it unbelievable? So I got rid of it. Then everyone on the telly was drinking. And I didn't realise that even though I might have felt that I didn't have a chemical addiction to alcohol, I had a psychological addiction to alcohol, and it changed the way I thought, and I found it really, really hard. The first time I went out properly and didn't drink, I was almost in a state of fight or flight for the whole night. I remember it vividly. I was like anxious and all that. And I'm better now. I still go out now, but it wasn't easy. And this was with me saying, oh, I'm not really a drinker anyway. The power of that alcohol on your mind and your relationship with these things, these addictions that we have in life, that we may be aware of, we may be semi-aware of, we might not want to fully acknowledge. It was so, so powerful how it impacted on my mind. And I just couldn't believe it. And I went weeks without drinking. But then after 3 weeks, because my mind knew, wait there, you can't drink anymore. Look at that bottle of Coors. It looked absolutely gorgeous every time I opened the fridge. And it was crazy, the power of it all. Now, I know that someone said to me that, I think I read somewhere that someone during lockdown, they were an alcoholic who hadn't drank for a few years, and they were going around the supermarket during lockdown. And you know, in them small ones, they make you walk past every section. And he went past the section, I think, and picked up a bottle and drank the lot that night. The power of will take you so far, but it's about changing your environment. You can change mentally, you can say, I'm ready for it. You can change your environment, your relationships, but it's always there in the background, isn't it? That what you had and what you could have had still if you were still there. It's almost like your animal brain wants that old identity back because it was secure in that. And do you still have these battles now after 500 days? Or do you feel like it's a process where you're getting better?
I'm definitely getting better. I think at the start, it was tough, and I felt a fair amount of shame that I couldn't, I struggled so much.
Yeah.
Because although I drank a fair bit over the years, I didn't really see myself as having a real big problem. But I knew there was something. I knew something wasn't right. But the struggle that I found was, it made me quite sad at the start, because I was thinking, well, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get through this easily? Well, I think a lot of people do struggle at the very start because their brain has become so used to receiving the pleasure of alcohol, which the first few drinks of alcohol are very pleasurable, and that's the reason why it's so popular. Problems really begin when you drink more than
I've heard Blind Boy. I don't know if you've ever listened to the Blind Boy podcast. He's very good on things like mental health and addiction and stuff. And he says, like, you know, a chocolate, he said, if you have one bar of chocolate, that's not a problem. He said, it's when you have like one of them gigantic bars and you do it every day and stuff. And again, moderation can work for some people, but for some people it can't. And I think that you learned when you were just drinking, watching the football, that this moderation isn't right for me. I need to move away from this completely. And I think that acknowledging the problem And I think either writing it down or saying it out loud, making that realization and then saying in your head, right, I need to change this, and then say, is my plan, is what I'm going to do. These things can happen slowly. They can happen over months. I think we talked before the podcast started that Ozzy Osbourne, who had real big problems with alcohol, woke up one morning and just said, right, that's it, finished. Alcohol finished. It was almost like a religious moment. And I think, I don't know if you know about Alex Van Halen, the drummer in Van Halen. And he was a serious alcoholic and he gave up completely. And he's still alive, as Eddie Van Halen sadly passed away last year. But Alex is still going. And Alex said that he would drink bottles of whiskey and he wouldn't even get drunk. His body was so resistant to it. And he just had that realization that I'm not going to survive unless I stop. Now, these are people who are like doing really well and successful. And one of the things about these kinds of issues is they affect everyone, but also success sometimes brings added pressure. And it gives you more like thinking time. You might have free time and you're on tour and you do, you know, everyone thinks, oh yeah, you know, I wish I had their problems, but addiction can be a serious problem for everyone. And you can have these realizations that like, right, that's it, you know, I need to get away from it. Or you can be more gradual. And basically, either way, you've got to make the choice yourself and come up with your plan and say, right, this needs to stop. And here's what I'm going to do to help. I'm going to tell people. Now, I've found it hard with certain people when I've given things up, including alcohol, other people who go like, oh, you know, come on, have one, or, you know, you can have a drink now and again. And that's not very helpful. And I've found that, you know, I'll be out and people are like, oh, why don't you have a drink? You can have a drink, or you can have one, can't you? And all that stuff. And they mean well, but have you found it beneficial to communicate with those around you? You know, I don't know what your job is or what your situation is, but to what extent have you told others, and to what extent do you think that that helped your kind of change?
Yeah, I think some sort of accountability was important to me. Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, I never went out so much in Berlin apart from apart from the football.
Yeah.
The sort of major bouts of drinking tended to be when I came back to England, because I was meeting friends again. Everyone was out and there was a good atmosphere. So I made sure I told people, but I didn't tell anyone until after about 6 weeks, because I wanted to be sure, really. And the responses I got ranged from, you know, well done, to, oh, well, I didn't think you had a problem. You should just, you know, maybe just have a few now and again, or... But generally, people have been supportive, and I think it's because I've been upfront with it. I've told them, listen, I'm not drinking, and most people seem to respect that.
I think that's good, and I think that way, their accountability, obviously, you've got to be accountable to yourself, but people have, like, accountability partners, and people who, but when you... I know we discussed this before, but when you say it, when you speak it, write it down, when you tell other people, then you know it's serious. And it sounds like you said, wait there, it's been 6 weeks now, so I'm going to start telling other people. And you use that as a way to build yourself up so that you were ready for that next stage. And again, you know, I think that's the way to go about things.
It was also in a way so that I couldn't go back. It's like burning bridges in a way. So I told people, I'd been enthusiastic about it and told them of the benefits I was feeling. I kind of held off telling people that long because maybe I didn't want to burn my bridges.
Yeah.
But it was only after that certain amount of time that I thought, right, those bridges need to be burnt. I can't, I don't want to go back to drinking.
Yeah.
So I'll tell people.
Yeah. Have you found yourself avoiding certain situations now, or certain places, Or do you feel you're at a stage where you can go to these places and not drink, or meet certain people and not drink? Is that something that's ongoing, or how have you found that?
Well, to be honest, it's been fairly easy for me, in the sense that my friend who I go and watch the football with, he drinks, he'll nurse one pint for a whole game. He's never been a drinker, so I've never had any pressure off him. And the times I've been back to England, people have known about it, and I've quite enjoyed going out and sort of proving to myself that I can still enjoy myself, you know, and I can still have a laugh. Because that was a big fear, was that nobody would want to talk to me. I wouldn't be funny anymore.
Yeah, I think that's important too, because I know that when I first went out, I found it tough. And there are tough choices to make, because I've heard it said that, like, your biggest friend is your own mind, but it's also potentially your own biggest enemy. And people say, oh, who are the 5 people who you spend most of your time with? Who are the 10 people who you mix with the most? What matters more? And if people are going out with people who are making them do things that they don't want to do, not directly, but indirectly through association or whatever, then there are big questions to be asked about what you want to do. Is that better for you? Do you maybe need to burn bridges to some extent? I found it harder first going out. I still go out now, not as much. I'm a father as well. My son's nearly 2.5. But obviously I'm going out less. COVID, I was going out less. But I've found it easier as time went by, as you said, because you're convincing your animal brain, your primitive brain, that this is the new me. So get used to it. And I'm moving on. I'm a better person. And that's powerful. And as you say, you do feel good. When I say to people, I haven't drank since 2008 now, I think, well done. You know, I still have that little reward, like, well done. Yeah. You don't drink, you don't do drugs, you eat healthily, well done. I've got this genetic illness, I've got problems with depression, etc. And you're doing what you can to counter that. And I feel that's important. There are times when I'm out, when I get tired, and at the end of the night, people have had a few, and I think, right, I've had enough, I'm going home. And I just go home, I drive home. And that's powerful for me, because I'm not reliant on, right, let's get a taxi. Who's dropping off who first? I don't want to leave my mates too early. I'm past all that now. I just go home if I've had enough. We go out for meals. My mates know where I'm at, and they say, oh, he doesn't like it in there. Because when I go in a club or a bar that's not that good, if you've had a few, it takes the edge off. Sometimes you're like, oh, it's crap in here, and you haven't got the alcohol to kind of disguise it. So you do have that, but I still go out. But I'm okay with that, and I still enjoy it. And as you say, it's nice to go out and say, I enjoyed that. And guess what? I didn't need that chemical to enjoy it. And that's part of the new me. And I don't want to go back. You know, it's nice, isn't it? How would you describe yourself now? Would you describe yourself as someone who used to have a problem with alcohol? How do you view yourself now, without putting words in your mouth, 509 days on, is it?
Tough one. Yeah, just really as a non-drinker. I mean, I suppose I was an alcoholic, in the sense of I needed drink either every day, or that binge type of sort of drinking. So I think I've overcome an alcohol problem, and I think it's different for everybody, because there's so many different types of drinker, and there's so many different types of sober people. It's hard to define what I call myself, really.
Yeah, I think my genetic illness, when I was younger and really ill, I used to think about it all the time. And now, like, I'm a bit better and I'm older, and now I try not to think about it all the time. So I can say, oh yeah, I've got Behçet's disease, but I can also say, well, I'm me first and foremost, and that might just be a label that may or may not help, but I'm okay with that. And it's okay to have labels, provided they don't define you, you know what I mean? That you're in control of the label. And you can use a label as an empowering thing early on to say, I want to move away from that. But then as time goes by, you know, you develop a new identity. What have been the positives for you? Have there been any underlying things that you feel are better because of it? How do you feel about yourself now? What have been the positives for you since you gave up?
I think the main benefit mentally was just a calmness of mind.
Yeah.
Less noise in my head.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't thinking about drinking or when I'm going to get my next drink. Do I need to go to shops today to make sure I've got some in?
Yeah.
The Sunday. These other small details, which at the time I just accepted as part of a drinker's life, weren't, because when you're not drinking, you just don't think about these things.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that you've got, you're basing your day around drink and the little things and battles and things that you need to do in relation to drink, and now that your mind is clear of that, that there's a calm. No, I think that's beautiful, that you've got a purpose and an identity that isn't dependent on that. You know, I think that's fantastic. And, you know, I used to binge drink. I mean, I went to the doctors once and the doctor said, how much do you drink a week? And I told them. And he just looked at me and went, that is extremely dangerous. And no one had really said that to me before. It's like about 21. Like nowadays, there's a lot more about alcohol in the media and attached to literature. And I went onto my old university website a few years ago and it had like alcohol awareness. And I thought, goodness, well, we never had the internet really when I went to uni. Yeah. When you went to uni, students got bladdered. And that was the way we did things. And it was like, I never even heard that message. You know, I never even knew about it. And my dad in one of my earlier podcasts was talking about that drinking culture that was part and parcel of identity for people, working class people in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, just from my dad's example. Alcohol's there in society and it's in people's lives. And often we don't sit back and go, what is this? How will we, is this right? Is this good for me? And I know that the financial benefits for me, when I stopped drinking alcohol and binge drinking, the financial benefits were big. I wasn't having these hangovers where like almost a day or increasingly 2 days, sometimes 3 days would be a write-off. And then here I was. I remember like I'd go out and I'd have a few pints and sometimes I'd go, oh, I can't read my book tonight in bed. And I was a bit disappointed, like, oh, I've had a few beers, so I won't be able to read my book. And I thought, well, that's good that I value reading a book in bed more than my alcohol. And it was those little things that kind of I started to notice that I thought, that's good. Your brain's telling you something. And it's sometimes it's hidden in plain sight, isn't it? And I remember a taxi driver once saying to me, like, I said I'd give up alcohol. And I told him, he went, oh, lad, he said, I wish I could, you know. I had a few too many whiskeys last night and it always makes the next day harder. And I remember thinking, like, he was upfront about it. I remember thinking, like, you know, why write off a day? I mean, you can have a good night because of alcohol. And yeah, it is nice. The lines become a bit more blurred and it takes off the edge and you loosen up a little bit. It, as you said, it is pleasurable, but there's a line. And sometimes people cross that line. And sometimes, as you discovered, the line might be no alcohol. And that's powerful to notice that as well and go, I'm moving beyond it. You know what I mean? And regardless of people's circumstances, we're all on our own journey to becoming a better person. I think you identified that and you moved beyond it. I think that's a very powerful story. Feel free to come back on that, but Do you know if there were people listening to this who maybe had an addiction to alcohol at some level, or a personality type, or smoking, or whatever that addiction might be? What would you say to them? Obviously, you've said a lot already, but what advice would you maybe give to someone who's thinking, maybe I do need to make a change?
Well, first thing I'd say, I'm no expert. I've just taken my own little path to how it helped me.
Yeah.
Certainly for drinking, is to take a few. If you are drinking every day or even binge drinking, it's to take some time off and see how the brain is talking to you.
Yeah.
Is it telling you to go back to alcohol or not? If it's not, then you probably haven't really got an addiction or a problem. But if you're struggling with it, then it might be worth doing some reading up about the situation. But about other addictions, I'm not so sure. I'm not sure. Yeah. I personally can give advice, to be honest.
Yeah. I think your example is important, and I think that you listen to your brain, and that self-analysis is important, because if you don't say, right, I want to change this, then people aren't going to change it. So you kind of examined yourself, and I always think back to Socrates, you know, an unexamined life is not worth living. And one of the things I mentioned in a few podcasts ago was about Harari, Yuval Harari. I don't know if you've read his book on Sapiens and Homo Deus, but he meditates for 2 hours a day, and I do meditation, and he says that allows him to sit back and examine what's around him more objectively, because we just do things, don't we, because it's habitual. And for you to sit back and go, nah, I need to change, and not only that, it needs to go, that's so powerful. And the strength of mind it then takes, and the commitment to move beyond that, which you've done successfully. And the way that you did it in stages and said, right, that's not working. That's a powerful message that goes out to everyone, regardless of your addiction. And sometimes people may need to talk to a counsellor or get advice. Sometimes people might need to avoid certain people. Sometimes people might say, right, I need to cut down significantly first before I make that final transition or whatever. It's very much about your own path. Have you had any experiences where, I know in England and across the Anglo-Saxon world, I don't know if it's the same in Germany, but, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous or any apps that you would recommend? I know that people can go out and find those that they find useful through a doctor, et cetera, but have you found that particularly helpful in getting you on your journey or reinforcing it?
I think I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
There's this sort of movement going around. It's this sort of grey area drinking, where it's a sort of gap between a moderate drinker and somebody with serious problems.
Yeah.
So they know they're drinking too much, but they can't stop.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of literature out there about that type of situation. And then what I did, I moved up to start to read about AA. At first, I was very resistant, because I thought it was some sort of cult. I didn't know anything about it. But the more I read about it and listened to podcasts about it, about members who've been through it, it's actually a wonderful example of how to live your life. It's a very positive community of people, helping each other, being nice to each other, not blaming other people for your problems, but a lot of the times it's problems are caused by yourself and not by other people.
Yeah.
And it's realizing that, help people make a step forward.
Yeah, and I know that my own understanding of AI through things I've heard and read, and through Russell Brand as well, who's had lots of issues with addiction that he's spoken about on his podcast, is this kind of like 12-point program and Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a lot of apps, there's a lot of stuff online, a lot of reading you can do, which is very, very, very helpful. And I found a lot of stuff relating to mental health online very helpful, a lot of stuff relating to addiction. I've also found speaking to the right doctors and the right professionals helpful too. And I don't know whether you have spoken to a doctor or anyone who said, right, this might help. But the first thing people can do is they can get advice online. You can go and see a medical specialist and they can point them in the right direction as well to things that might help them. But I think the first thing is to acknowledge the problem and to be honest with yourself. And, you know, I think that's the very important thing that everyone needs to do. And then there is a lot of good stuff out there and you've got to find what's useful for you at the end of the day. I mean, I listen to certain podcasts and read certain, not for me, that other people have said is really good. And, you know, you've got to find your own way and have an open mind. But podcasts I found very useful because you can get podcasts about things which you don't get in the mainstream media. You can read stuff online and that, but a podcast, all of a sudden there's these voices talking to you saying, I've experienced this. This is what I did. This will help you. This might help you. And that's massive, isn't it?
The podcasts that I listen to are mainly hearing stories of alcoholics.
Yeah.
And when I first started to listen to them, I was thinking, oh, you know, these people have got problems. But they start telling the story and then a lot of the things I start to relate to. I say, well, I used to do that. I used to go to different supermarkets to pick up my beer because I didn't want the person to know that. Little things like that. And then you realise you're not alone. It's like, it's so common. And not to feel ashamed about it, but to, as you say, try and make a positive change to get out of a rut in a way.
Yeah. And I think that positive change thing's the important thing. And I think the older I get as well, I just think, right, where am I going next? You know, how can I become better? And I think that's a part of it as well, isn't it? Like never giving up on the idea of becoming a better person and realising what's best for you. I know you've said that you're from England, you're living in Berlin, etc. Any other background about yourself that you think's relevant that, you know, you might want to mention about this story? Do you work from home? Do you work in an office? That kind of situation. I know that you said lockdown helped, but anything else that's important, do you think, in your story?
Well, I think that the fact that I was drinking from an early age, just with friends, it was a social thing to begin with. And I suppose the alcohol did sort of ease my general social anxiety. But I really enjoyed drinking over the years, but I didn't really have much choice because there was no option in those days to be a non-drinker. And I would have been scared that my friends would have stopped talking to me, basically. If I wasn't Dave, the bloke that was always out for a drink and, you know, he's cheerful and, you know, he's occasionally funny. And, you know, if I was a non-drinker, I don't think I would have met a lot of people that I have over the years. But it goes back to the fact that I didn't have a choice. It was like expected that drink was never seen bad in the family and then to your friends, then through university and then started working, then it was drinking after work. It never seemed to be a problem until I've got to this age and, you know, I realised
I think that thing as well about the being able to examine your life. And I certainly think when I grew up, you know, you drink. Again, I think that it gives people confidence when they've had a drink. It gives the people a release. It's a method of control it's a coping mechanism. It's a habitual thing that people do. All the different things that it is, it's hard to break it down and analyze it, particularly when you're young, and then you get to a certain age and you go, wait there, that isn't the only way to live your life. And if you could have gone back to then, I mean, I've got friends through work, friends through sport, friends through going out and drinking, through going to match, and then the match was about drinking, you know, all these different overlapping Venn diagrams. But people make friends in different ways, and it's hard to view it objectively because you look back and think, I made my friends through drinking, but, you know, you might have made different friends in different contexts.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's very hard, isn't it, to know? I mean, yeah, if someone said to me, would you change what's happened in your life so far? I've been asked this a few times, and I've often said in my mind, I think, well, I wouldn't want to go through that again. But also you think, well, that's actually made me a better person through that. And where I am today is the result of all of those lessons I've learned, and I'm a better person for it. I think
it's partly also about, you know, if you look back, you can start to worry about things that have happened. And then sometimes if you look to the future, then you can worry about what's going to happen. And then just sort of living in the present can be quite a freeing feeling, I think.
Absolutely. And being mindful and living in the present, themes I keep coming back to, that clarity in your mind, living in the present, that's powerful, isn't it? You're not worrying about the past, you're not worrying about the future. You just live in that moment. I think that's where life is. And I think ultimately, when you've had alcohol, or when you need alcohol, you're taken away from that ability to just experience the present in all its fullness without needing any enhancements in any way.
Yeah, but it dulls your senses after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, Dave, I think we're approaching an hour now. Just want to thank you for your time and for telling your story.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for reaching out as well, you know, and saying, you know, I think I might have something to say. You know, your story is very important. And I think ultimately you've acknowledged something, looked at yourself, and you're on a very, very, you know, secure journey into a better future. And I think that's ultimately what we all need to do. You know, when people don't value their own future, I think that's a sad thing. And to say, no, we're there, I'm better than this, I think that's very, very powerful. And I've been through something similar to you. Other people out there will have been, even if alcohol isn't, you know, a battle they've had, they'll have other things. And sometimes people are addicted to personality types, whatever, and you don't even know about it. So I think the first thing is acknowledging it and recognizing it and examining your life. I think that's a crucial thing. Make the changes in a sustainable way, and if necessary, get that help to get you through it. So Dave, thank you very much for giving up your Saturday afternoon, and thanks again for your very, very important message. If you would like to come on to North and South Podcasts to talk about creativity, surviving financial hardship, making your way in the world, politics, history, well-being, anything that makes a difference to people's lives, please get in touch through Twitter, or if you know me personally, and it would be great to speak to you. The more people we speak to, the better, the more representative it is, and the better it is for everyone. Also, if you know people who work in the political sphere or in the history sphere or well-being, professionals, anyone with any insight whatsoever, send them my way. Thank you very much. Additionally, if you feel you can help out in any way, get involved in doing podcasts, helping me with my theme to the podcast, which hasn't been sorted yet, absolutely anything that you think that you can help with, please get in touch. It'd be great to hear from you too.